what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Yes, it's Toronto, CHRY 105.5. This is Radio Basics. I am Steve, and I will be the host for Radio Basics tonight. We got a big show ahead. We got a lot of things to talk about. And most importantly, we got to talk about the fund drive, the annual fund drive. CHRY 105.5 is aiming for over $100,000. We got to raise it if we can keep our radio station going. CHRY 105.5, as you know from our previous hosts, is a listener-driven campus community radio station. So we need your help. We need your pledges to keep our work going. So please call in. The number is 416-736-5656. You can call all throughout the show, make a pledge to Radio Basics or your other favorite radio programs here on CHRY 105.5. Today, we're going to be playing a few songs from the Underground Railroad mixtape, Volume 1, which is a community music project in Toronto that's bringing youth together against all forms of violence, including the violence of the police and the state against our communities. And we'll be speaking to one of the organizers of the project, hip-hop artist and community organizer Wasun. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be getting into an in-depth analysis of the unprecedented worldwide collapse of financial markets that's going on in the world right now. And, you know, we're going to be talking about what's happening, you know, and right now there's an unprecedented degree of wealth being transferred to the rich from the poor, unbelievably. We're going to be looking into that. And to lend us some insights on the topic at hand, we're going to be playing a few radio essays from African-American political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. And finally, before we end our show today, we're going to be spending a few minutes with Professor Arnold Detwaru of New College, University of Toronto, from the Caribbean Studies program. He's going to be talking to us about the 7th Annual Racism and National Consciousness Conference taking place at University of Toronto this Saturday, October 25th, starting at 10 a.m. The theme of the conference for this week is, for this year, is white supremacy and the regulation of identity. So this week, the last 2 weeks on CHRY 105.5, as you know, it has been the Waves You Crave fund drive, annual fund drive. Please call in 416-736-5656. We cannot keep the work of this radio show going, this radio program with this radio station going, without the support and help of our listeners. So please call in right now, 416-736-5656. Make a pledge, $5, $10, $25, whatever you can pledge, it'll be much appreciated. We're going to go to a song right now by Wasun. It's called Born Into Oppression. And when we come back from the song, we're going to be talking to Wasun.
Single parent, so I cook for kids in the kitchen, like youth pitching, so they grow healthy with wisdom. Two sons for revolution, fun and religion. Soldiers like women with children, living in prison. No CAS visits, locked down with precision. Oppression and conditions, breed more resistance, skip a generation. They'll succeed on the mission, maybe not, probably end up dead or in prison. On the outside, genocide, party bullshitting, like it's 94, and Biggie still living, with pimps and grimy whores. Is this really living? I'd rather sleep with the dead. No, it really isn't. Daisy's popping up by my head, watching television. We're being watched by the feds, call it devil vision. Look around, wipe my forehead, hell is dripping with sweat, blood, and tears from these fellow snitches.
Black woman, born into oppression.
Black children, born into oppression.
Crack dealing, born into oppression.
Blacks killing, born into oppression.
Black woman, born into oppression.
Black children, born into oppression.
Crack dealing, born into oppression.
Blacks killing, born into oppression.
The Wild Wild West really doesn't make no sense. Like going from
owning property to more rent. With 80 bodies in the hood filled with more lead, the property value go from dollars to more cents. People moving out, houses selling out for less. Every time bodies drop from bullets and more stress. In Oakwood there's no rats, mice is a rodent. But woman, low income families, no men. 10 bars, 20 after hours, hoes bent. A few bloods, proletarians and more dreads. Hustling for a cooked food before bed. Half a grade 10 in the street for more bread. Hard dough, only middle pieces, no ends. Gunning like Middle East, turning up more dead. Students need to go back to school for more creds. Get a job, grind, make it difficult for feds.
Black woman, born into oppression.
Black children, born into oppression.
Black dealing, born into oppression.
Blacks killing, born into oppression.
Black woman, born into oppression.
Black children, born into oppression.
Crack dealing, born into oppression.
Blacks killing, born into oppression.
I'm built with Quan J, he a modern C-H-E. Gorilla on the strip, war with T-A-B. Gorillas in the mist, we must be crazy. Preparing the poor to go to war with ladies and gentlemen who own property on Bay Street. With underdogs who won't live to see 18. From the rock in a hard place like the 80s. We're rank and file workers, sunk way deep in recession. 82, fucking take these cracking weapons. 101, oh, you pay me the message. Reagan propaganda they screen through TVs from Transformers to 18. 20 years later, our nightmare they dream. The war on drugs, things not what they seem. A war on thugs that began in 83 to lock a whole generation up from 18 to 31 and build more jails to make cream. They put every cell block to work at 8 teams. Yearly salary, overtime, less than 8 G's. Get the picture. Von Rhodes salute.
Yes, yes, that was Born into Oppression. Brought to you by Toronto's own, from the Revolutionary Underground of hip-hop here in Toronto, teacher, poet, soon-to-be PhD from Vaughan and Oakwood, single father of two beautiful young boys, Shaheem and Jaden, longtime worker and organizer of Black Action Defense Committee and Basics Community Newsletter, a good friend and a good comrade to a lot of us here in Toronto. That was Wasun, and we have Wasun on the line with us here today. Wasun, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing tonight?
Good, Wasun. What are you saying, man? Good to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
All right.
So, basically, we were just playing your track, Born into Oppression, off the Underground Railroad mixtape, Volume 1. Tell us about that project.
The Underground Railroad mixtape is a part of the Hood to Hood movement, which we're organizing in Weston, Lawrence, Lawrence Heights, a.k.a. Jungle, and Jane and Finch. And so what we're using is the mixtape to spread positive messages and some revolutionary thoughts and ideology. We have some songs dealing with the prison industrial complex, the war on drugs, the police occupation of black communities in Toronto. And we're just struggling to build unity with the mixtapes. These are neighborhoods that are blood or crip turfs, neighborhoods that don't get along. Mm-hmm. Lately, the Jane Strip has been really live. There's been a lot of shootings. There's been a lot of conflict, so it's ripe for this type of movement.
Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is that the Underground Railroad hip-hop project is part of a broader movement called Hood to Hood?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So the Hood to Hood really and truly is to create a network of revolutionary black working class youth, and it's something that we're extending to other communities. Our next step will be to organize Tamil youth out in Scarborough, and possibly Latino youth or Portuguese youth in the future. But really right now we're focusing on a lot of street-involved black youth, unemployed youth in the streets that are not entering the working class and are getting involved in the whole gang-banging culture and lifestyle, and we're trying to build a revolutionary alternative to that and do political education with the gangs. For example, this summer we were screening Bastards of the Party to a lot of the bloods at Vaughan and Oakwood, and that was successful in terms of getting them to understand how the war on drugs, the prison industrial complex, actually works out concretely. And these are policies that U.S. imperialism implemented in the United States in the 80s and 90s to the present, and now quickly with the Harper government, which is conservative and recently won in our election, they will be bringing this here in full force in the next upcoming years. In fact, it's been here for the last 5 years, but I'm guaranteeing we'll see an escalation in the war on drugs in the upcoming years.
Indeed, I believe Stephen Harper during the campaign was talking big on tough on crime politics, was he not?
Yes.
So, I mean, for our listenership, maybe you can tell us a little bit about, like, what are the links between the prison industrial complex, the war on drugs, and how violence, you know, that's taking place on the streets, how does it relate to that?
Basically, right now, the media is creating an ideology of the black youth criminal and the idea that all black youth in inner city, low-income, working-class neighborhoods are gangs or a part of organized crime. So they put, whenever there's a shooting in the city, they put out these images and they promote this ideology, which is false. A lot of these youth are unemployed workers, and they are getting pushed out of the new economy, just like a lot of workers, whether they're black, white, brown, or Asian. And so they create this ideology of the black gangster, and then they create a case to increase policing in these neighborhoods. So we have police regularly stationed in the neighborhoods. We have an increase in surveillance, intelligence gathering, undercovers. We have police on bikes riding up and down through the neighborhood. Now, commonly, while I'm walking home, there's police sneaking up behind me on bikes. You know, you think
for
it's
real.
Regular neighbors, but they've got the cops on bikes. In a lot of the schools out here in the West End, they have police station with guns, which is not necessary. Police with guns in local high schools.
Mm-hmm. So something like 27 high schools right now have that in Toronto, do they not?
Right. So they're using that ideology of the black youth criminal gangster to increase the police occupation in the community. As well, police and schools are working closely together. They're working very closely to monitor black youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the prison population of black youth is increasing by leaps and bounds. And then this creates a case to invest in the construction of new prisons with the private sector. And these new prisons will be for this overwhelming prison population, which is not even real. There's so many police right now that they don't even really have anything to do except arrest young black youth, and a lot of the charges that they're getting are low-level drug charges, or some of them are false charges. So the idea is that prison goes from a penal institution to a whole business, an industry, and it's the prison industrial complex. Right now, they're building a jail in Brampton, $81 million. A few years ago, the province invested in that, and that is a sign of more to come.
Yeah, and I think what, from my analysis, what seems especially troubling about these times is that we're moving into an era of grave, grave economic crisis. And, you know, we see what the model that's applied in the United States is that with waves of deindustrialization because of neoliberal economics, what's happening is that in small town America, middle America, is that the prison industrial complex is giving jobs to these white workers who have lost their blue collar jobs, you know, decent unionized jobs in factories. And, you know, by putting the white working class into jails, it's creating very hardened class divisions. Mind you, they're still working class people, but very hardened class divisions, racializing the divisions within the working class by you know, giving these prison jobs to white workers and then actually putting black workers pushed out of the working class into jail. Do you see that as a possibility of coming to Canada as well?
Yes, definitely. And that's why we need to extend this movement, the Hood to Hood, which is really a political education unit movement, and it's a movement to educate black working class youth, and we need a similar movement in white working class communities for the kids that are actually going to go and work as security guards in these jails that are built in the upcoming years. And so that there is that interracial solidarity on a revolutionary working class program in line. A lot of working class youth deserve more from the society, and there is things to be demanded. And this generation that we are, there will be, as you predicted, major economic crises. And it's not just black youth that are being impacted, but it's workers all over Canada.
All of us.
Since 2007, there's been over 150,000 to 200,000 jobs that have been lost in the province. And like you said, a lot of these jobs were stable jobs in the manufacturing sector and other industries. And when these jobs go out, the only thing they get replaced with are part-time minimum wage jobs.
Low-level service sector jobs.
Right. And for our generation, if we have to work three jobs that are paying us peanuts just to survive, then that's going to create a whole breakdown in our communities. So what we're doing is we're beginning Hood to Hood in the black community, but definitely this is something that the whole working class needs to be educated on, and we're going to go to other communities, because in basics, there's a whole bunch of different nationalities represented. So we're hoping to extend that neighborhood to neighborhood, hood to hood.
Okay, thank you, Wasson. Before we finish up with your discussion here tonight, is there anything you want to tell our listeners out there?
Yeah, look out for the Set It Off Girls Groups. We're organizing Set It Off Girls Groups in different high schools in the West End. It's definitely a movement that's emerging side by side with the Hood to Hood. And what we're doing is setting up these groups to educate young women, get them organized, and to be able to wage struggles against injustice in their communities. So in Lawrence Heights, the Set It Off girls are getting ready to join the struggle against gentrification there and the redevelopment, which is really displacing a stable working class neighborhood and relocating families all over the place, many of whom have students that go to the local high school where Set It Off is, Sir Sanford Fleming Academy.
Well, much love, Wasson. Thank you for being on the show with us tonight.
All right. Peace.
Peace. That was Wasson of the Hood to Hood Movement. He works for Black Action Defense Committee. He's just finishing his PhD. He's an incredible activist in the community. I got mad respect for that man. You know, this is a man who has stood tall in the face of a lot of trials in his life, and you know, who encourages the rest of us as men to be better in what it means to be a man, as fathers, as friends, as community members, and as comrades in our struggle for a better society. Just to remind all our listeners, this is Waves You Crave Week at CHRY 105.5. It's one of our last days. We're coming to a close soon here on the radio show of the fund drive. So please call in, make your pledges known. It's 416-736-5656. CHRY 105.5 is campus community radio. It's listener supported radio. We don't get to do what we do by, you know, massive corporations, you know, buying up all our airtime to throw their annoying ads on, right? We can do what we do because of the support of the people, because of the support of the community, and because of the support of other organizations that donate to help keep us alive. So please call in. It's 416-736-5656. One of our last radio hosts said that, you know, maybe it's because the economic crisis that a lot of people haven't been calling in. That could be the case, but you know what I mean? I think whether we're going into economic crisis or not, which is going to be a topic that we discuss a little bit later, people need to be contributing to a project like this, because this is independent media that gets out the information of what's actually happening in our society, which makes, you know, Radio Basics possible, which allows us to come out there and tell the truth of what's actually happening in our economy, which we're going to talk about a little bit later today. But before that, let's go to a commercial break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Yeah, yeah, it's for the people. Yo, hey yo, I gon' drop it like this on them. Yo, hey yo, hey yo, hey yo, I look on the streets, I'm seeing homicide. Wait, rock flip for money, niggas trying to survive. We don't realize our part of this world as a whole, integrated in a system that we're taking its toll on all of us. Plus, now you see the rust of the military industrial complex. Corrupt all government, money for bombs should pay for books, but they scared of history because we take back what it took. From Africa, Asia, and Latin America, now they tearing up the Middle East with bombs, cause that's the area that's rich with oil, and it separates east from west. They want control to keep trying to suppress. What we up against is money over life, the system we live in, and killing the poor, but we all of the light. From the hood to the refugee camps, we all one, gotta take a stance just to survive and advance. From the hood to the world, that's where we gotta come up and survive. It's still a real generation that be moving blind. It's time to fight back a system, maybe one more time. From the hood to the world, that's where we gotta come up and survive. It's still a real generation that be moving blind. It's time to fight back a system, maybe one more time. Yo, yo, I look overseas, I see them burning alive.
realize we the power behind them weapons. And if we united, we got the power to stop Armageddon. The lessons of Gandhi and Dr. King should bring wisdom to the generation of bling. Doing our own thing to come up, but the struggle's up, stuck. Can't think about justice when your mind's stuck in the ghetto, dodging bullets and cops, selling that rock, cause that's the source of wealth that we got. We the have-nots, but that rock comes from the people of its color to smother the brothers of a movement. Now we kill each other for the love of money and the love. Who only trying to see a man for their riches? And so many good women can't trust us cause their heart is broken. They don't know a good man from the blood they smoking.
From the hood to the world, that's where we gotta got that hope and survive the struggle. A generation that be moving blind. It's time to fight back the system, maybe one more time. From the hood to the world, that's where we gotta got that hope and survive the struggle. A generation that be moving blind. It's time to fight back the system, maybe one more time.
Life is a question, death is the answer. As a matter of fact, we just a letter in God's chapter in the book of life. There's 6 billion pages with ages and stages. We don't know how we create this until our last breath. Until then, we the gods of this earth. Don't know what it's worth until we lay it in dirt. We the people create, love, hate, judge, communicate, and relate in God's image. But he ain't defined with physics, so when he touched down, we'll still be at the line of scrimmage. I'm like, what is this? World is sin, devil got me in the vice grip, cause he wants me loyal to him. I'd rather die with a legacy of love like Christ. Only the brave could ever make a martyr sacrifice. My device is the mic. If they try to shut me up, you see the people rise up until the sky get touched.
From the hood to the world, that's where we gotta got that hope and survive the struggle. A generation that be moving blind. It's time to fight back the system, maybe one more time. From the hood to the world, that's where we gotta got that hope and survive the struggle. A generation that be moving blind. It's time to fight back the system, maybe one more time. From the hood to the world, that's where we gotta.
That was another track off the Underground Railroad Mixtape Volume 1, People, by Infrared, a Toronto hip-hop artist and an up-and-coming actor here in Toronto. Infrared, a.k.a. Michael Miller, recently starred in A Winter Tale, a film in which Toronto itself is a subject, where working-class, marginalized, and ghettoized Toronto is a subject. Set against the backdrop of Parkdale, the film takes us through the lives of people in the black community here in Toronto, African-Caribbean, African-Canadian, facing the hardships of Canadian society, and in particular, how this community in question reacts to the murder of an innocent 10-year-old boy in their hood. You know, we in Basics don't put up with this blame the victim BS that you see in the corporate media all the time, which loves to take against our community and with respect to the violence that does exist in our communities. So, I mean, we're not promoting this film as if it were some, you know, bleeding heart liberal trash, you know, trying to invoke pity in people by presenting a situation such that, you know, the violence in our communities blames the victims themselves. You know, quite to the contrary. I think A Winter Tale takes a very different approach to this crisis, wherein the community itself becomes the subject of its own change. The movie is really provocative. It's really real. So I'd encourage people to check it out and support this local film, support local talent. Infrared, he's one of the main actors of the film. It's incredible. I believe you can get more information about the film at awintertale.ca. Now, over the last few months, the effects of a very deep crisis in the global capitalist system have been emerging, with many of the world's largest banks completely collapsing, if not being saved by governments coming to the rescue of these failing institutions. Over the course of this crisis, much has been said in the media and newspapers by financiers, economists, and politicians alike. But yet, so little has been said about what's essentially happening here. Fraud, lax regulation, irresponsible lenders and borrowers, unpredictability. None of these explanations add up when we take a survey of what's actually been happening over the last few months and years in the global economy. But these explanations are not intended to make sense. They're intended to deceive, to keep the vast majority of us in the dark so that the effects of this crisis can be exclusively borne back onto us, unbeknownst to us. What has been happening in the global economy for the last few years? Why are we in a period of profound crisis, and what does this mean for the majority of people? The immediate and superficial causes of the current economic crisis stem from what has been called the subprime mortgage crisis. In the early 2000s, after high-tech stocks crashed, finance capitalists, the big banks, needed a new place to put their capital. The U.S. Federal Reserve cut its interest rates to stimulate more borrowing at a time when the market was in great crisis. Massive funds were pumped into these banks, and these banks in turn needed to find some way to lend out that money in a profitable way. Low-income and working-class borrowers became their target. These banks began to aggressively push mortgages onto people who could have never afforded them, at a time when the housing prices were rapidly rising. Many people took on loans for the full price of their homes, being lured in with no interest teaser rate periods of 1 or 2 years where people wouldn't pay any interest on their loans, loans which were the value of the entire price of their home. People who were working minimum wage jobs were getting these loans. Well, what's wrong with low-income people taking out loans to own their own houses, some may ask. Well, nothing, of course, unless it was calculated that all of these people would ultimately be forced into default, bankruptcy, and not be able to pay off those mortgages anyway. Any high school economics teacher could have calculated that the crushing debt load that many Americans were taking on would have led them to bankruptcy on a mass scale. This is exactly what happened when housing prices began to plummet, predictably, leaving many people with mortgage debts worth more than the price of their actual homes. 1 in 6 homeowners today owe more to the banks for their mortgages than their houses are even still worth. Hence, Americans have begun and have been defaulting en masse for a year or two now. These banks who took on these toxic liabilities or debts, knowing very well how unstable they were, began packaging them in large blocks of assets and selling them off to other financial institutions. Financial institutions from around the world bought up these risky investments, and the result has been that once American homeowners began defaulting en masse, many of these financial institutions have collapsed or altogether ceased to exist, if not bought out by the government, by various governments. And now, everyone who has had a major stake in this financial scheme, those banks which had billions of dollars of stakes in the global monopoly finance capitalism, are pretending that they are the victims, that they are the ones that need help. And with their hands stretched out to governments of the world's major capitalist countries, America, Britain, Germany, France, for example, perhaps even Canada soon to be, these financial institutions are being given trillions of dollars in taxpayers' money, indebting our children for future generations to come in schemes that will lead to the complete dismantling of our social welfare and other services and an all-around miserable economic future. In America, already nearly $1 trillion in bailout money has been injected into finance markets at the expense of regular working-class American people. In Europe, which with major bailouts in Britain, Germany, and France already being passed, the bailouts already amount to more than $2 trillion in Europe alone. What this all amounts to is the greatest transfer of wealth in history from the people to the already filthy rich. Some of the more recent causes of the crisis have been listed above. But it's essential to understand that this crisis, one of epic proportions, stems from the very normal operations of capitalism. Capitalism must constantly expand, constantly increase its profits, and constantly reinvest those profits. And as we are seeing, those profits are not profits which are trickling down to the billions of us. What happened with the subprime mortgage situation was a manufactured crisis where, first, millions of Americans were dispossessed of everything they owned, their houses and everything else included. And second, where the banks then used the crisis as an opportunity to ram through what is by far proving to be the largest plunder of public wealth in history. And the thing is, it's not even over yet. Many commentators have called this system that we're experiencing right now socialism, because the state is nationalizing banks. These commentators, frankly, are idiots. Socialism is the process of nationalizing the wealth of a society, as is being done today in Venezuela or Bolivia, where the oil and gas of the land is being socialized and the profits therefrom are being distributed among the people. What we're living through right now is the nationalization of debt, the nationalization of losses, so that banks are getting away with more money while the rest of us are being left with the costs. So don't be mistaken, brothers and sisters. This is not socialism. Let's not let these financial thieves tarnish the history of socialism by trying to call what's happening today socialist. What it is, in fact, is one can call outright capitalist dictatorship. What else do you call a system where governments are implementing financial schemes that are destroying the lives of tens and hundreds of millions of people for the benefit of a tiny financial oligarchy. Look at the tent cities popping up all over America of homeless people. Hundreds of thousands and millions of homeless people popping up in America because of this crisis. They're not being bailed out. In fact, the economic bailouts of Western governments over the last 2 months bears resemblance to another economic system, not socialist. In fact, capitalism's meaner, uglier big brother, fascism. When governments actively... what is fascism? What is the economics of fascism, at least? Let's define this. When governments actively intervene to prop up financial institutions, banks, industry, to save them from their own crises, imposing the losses onto the people and completely privatizing the profits, that's not free market capitalism. That's active intervention on behalf of those with the most money. And historically, those have been the systems that have been fascist. And from that economic system, everything else follows. Repressive cultural climates, state terrorism, censorship, endless war, and so on, to say the least. How this is all going to affect Canada is yet to be understood in its full proportions. However, the loss of hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs in Canada this year alone is one sign of things to come. The Harper government announcing that it will spend $500 billion in the military in the years to come on its occupations of places like Afghanistan and Haiti, and who knows what will come, is another sign. Whatever the case, Canadians are not immune from this crisis. Regular working class people are under attack, especially those who are most marginalized, especially those who are non-white, and we are left with the responsibility thus to organize ourselves and to do something about this. And now for some more analysis on the situation in the global capitalist economy, we turn to a political prisoner of the United States government, the ever poetic, the always prolific, and often prophetic, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Behind the money crash. For millions of people, the economic crash and crisis seems almost mystical. What happened? Why did it happen? How did it happen? It seems more complex than it really is. That's because the corporate media is, more often than not, a contributor to confusion rather than a source of clarity. The media thrives on conflict, chaos, and controversy. That's why I found in the British left press what I've never seen in the corporate media. The text of a 2002 open letter from U.S. financier Warren Buffett to his Berkshire Hathaway shareholders. Buffett, one of the richest people in the U.S., warned his shareholders to avoid derivatives, which he described as time bombs, both for the parties that deal in them and the economic system. Buffett explained that derivatives are financial agreements for the exchange of money at some future date, which could be 20 years or more. What makes them dangerous is they're collateralized or guaranteed based on often faulty reference points. For example, derivatives may be traded saying, in 10 years, GM stocks will be double its 2004 value. And if it does, in, say, 2014, the instrument buyer will receive, say, $10 million. In many cases, before the contract is ripe, not a penny has changed hands, yet some companies assign these instruments a value, recorded them on their books as assets, when in fact, they had no real value. Remember Enron? On paper, they were rolling in dough. In fact, however, they were rolling in paper. For at any time, if they hit a snag, they had no real cash to cover corporate debts. It was on the books, but not in the banks. Again, Buffett explained 6 years ago why these instruments should be avoided, writing to his shareholders, and I quote, "The derivatives genie is now well out of the bottle, and these instruments will almost certainly multiply in variety and number until some event makes their toxicity clear." In closing, Buffett warned, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, carrying dangers that are potentially lethal. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio. Markets on fire. As stocks fall around the U.S., in Europe, and in Asia, the dreaded R word and D word can now be said aloud. Recession, depression. There it is. On two continents, central banks are pouring taxpayers' money into the pockets of big banks and big businesses in a bid to stabilize financial markets. That makes about as much sense as pouring table salt into the sea or pouring sand into the Sahara. That's because the big banks and companies are swimming in dough. That's obvious from the way they throw buckets of money at their executives and CEO golden parachutes. They've got money to burn. They just want and are getting your money to play with, courtesy of the Federal Reserve and central banks. Am I just being facetious saying play with your money? Well, unfortunately, no. For the last few decades, governments and businesses worshipped at the altar of what's called laissez-faire economics, a French term meaning let it be. That meant let the banks and markets do whatever to make money to get profits. Recently, French President Nicolas Sarkozy, a politician of the right, looking over the red ink and financial wreckage from the American, British, French, and German economy, said, laissez-faire is finished. The all-powerful market that is always right is finished. Those who preached laissez-faire as the new market religion also viewed the red tide rising, and let it be quickly became, we can't let it fail. Within days of the U.S. Federal Reserve's injection of some $800 billion on Wall Street, the British Central Bank dropped some £50 billion on London's financial sector, or in U.S. dollars, $107 billion, all in taxpayer dollars and pounds. When the markets fail, you will bail them out. When you fail, no one will bail you out. And even after the bailouts, credit lines are so frozen that banks can't get loans from banks. Why not? Because they can't trust that the loans will be repaid. If they can't trust each other, how can you trust them? From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio. Fall of the House of Capital? By the time you hear this, the $700 billion bailout will have been old news, one of the biggest transfers of wealth in history. But it will not heal that which ails the nation as it trips and stumbles like a drunken sailor on shore leave. The reasons are simple, for the problems are systemic, built into the rapacious nature of the machinery humming all around us. This Rube Goldberg-like contraction of democratic forms at the service of the financial services industry is a bottomless maw, a gaping mouth that is never sated. Why was there no alarm when millions of people lost their homes to foreclosures made inevitable by variable mortgage rates? When millions lost manufacturing jobs to low-paying service gigs? When living standards crumbled and when take-home pay fell to 1972 levels? Where was the alarm? There was no alarm, for this was the blind market at work, the leveling way of globalism, the new world moving through, preparing the way for the triumph of capitalism uber alles. Few were the politicians who gave voice to this immense social suffering. Fewer still used their power to try to assuage their pain, for they too were drunk on the wine of globalism. But when the ripple spread upwards, from the foreclosed homes to the foreclosing banks, and from the banks to investment houses, Congress steered from their drunken stupor and rang alarm bells the loudest. It's an economic 9/11, yelled some. It's a financial tsunami, said others. When Americans were hoodwinked into subprime loans and millions were faced with foreclosures, where was the alarm? More importantly, where was the help for those who were endangered? Nowhere. Nowhere. If they were helped, the present economic crisis would have been mitigated. Karl Marx and Frederick Engels wrote 160 years ago that the state is but the executive for the capitalists. After what we've seen, who can doubt it? The empire is crumbling. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You are listening to Mumia Abu-Jamal on Prison Radio. He is a death row prisoner, political prisoner, one of thousands and thousands of political prisoners on this continent. This is Waves You Crave Week at CHRY 105.5. We are Radio Basics. Please call in and make your support felt. Make a donation of $5, $10, $20, whatever you can donate. It's really important to call in and support Campus Community Radio Station as CHRY 105.5, because without you, without the support of our listeners, we cannot continue with our work. Oh, we have a goal of $100,000 at this radio station over the course of our fund drive. So it's really important that you call in and give us your support if you like our work. We're going to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. Radio Basics, we are back, CHRY 105.5. Next up, we're going to be talking with Professor Arnold Itwaru of the New College Program Caribbean Studies. This weekend, October 25th, is the 7th annual Racism and National Consciousness Conference. It's going to be taking place from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at New College. The theme of this year's conference is white supremacy and the regulation of identity. I believe we have Professor Arnold Itwaru on the phone. Are you with us, Arnold?
Yep.
Thank you, Professor. So tell us a little bit about the history of the conference. What is the history of the conference?
Well, this conference actually started since 2002, the year when Fred Case's book called Racism and National Consciousness was revised and reissued. And since then, we've been having a conference every year at New College under the title Racism and National Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And as the years developed, we divided the conference into themes. And this year, our theme is racism in relation to white supremacy and the regulation of identity. You know, dimensions of the whole phenomenon of racism mm-hmm. constitute themes every year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's been running for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is the seventh year.
This is the seventh year.
That it's actually going to be on. And the response has been, very encouraging. We've been having from 300 to 400 people attend every year. And these sessions are sessions where people from everywhere nearly come in and participate as they feel comfortable in, and it creates an atmosphere of a good talk and critical work at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was Dr. Frederick Case?
Oh, he was an amazing individual. He spoke 10 languages and was completely,
wow,
completely bilingual. In fact, he was a Guyanese, so he was born as someone who spoke English. He grew up in Britain, but subsequently, when he got educated in Ohio, he became the first director of the Department of French at U of T. And the director of the graduate program. Fred has had a number of publications, and his interests were multiple. They were about culture. They were about the problem of imperialism and racism. And they were about also avenues towards forms of spirituality, which constitutes aspects of the being of human beings and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So Fred was this amazing person in many ways, a terrific lecturer, and he was quite an important figure in my life, basically.
Indeed, I wasn't at U of T certainly when he was teaching, but I can certainly say that the effects, the impressions that Mr. Case would have left have definitely been felt. I'd imagine, because the Caribbean Studies program, in my experience, I took a course or two in the program with yourself and
mm-hmm.
and with some other professor,
mm-hmm.
and I could say that it from the lay of the landscape at University of Toronto, the Caribbean Studies program seems to be a mecca, so to speak, for people who are just flocking towards critical thinking and critical knowledge in the university. Could you speak about the impression that he's made, or maybe even the development of the Caribbean Studies program at U of T?
Yeah, well, Fred founded the program under great difficulty. and got me to UFT, to New College, to actually develop the program. So to a large extent, the program was developed in conjunction, by me, but in conjunction with Fred, who was then the principal of New College. And it moved on from there to me developing it and directing it for the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. and getting the program to in fact have a minor degree, a major degree, and a specialist degree. And the emphases which I have used in the program have, in terms of critical scholarship, have been the kinds of emphases that Fred was encouraging at all times, and developed, of course, in different directions. So, you know, Fred's vision is the one that was there behind the program, and it is his vision in terms of, you know, racism and national consciousness, which I mm-hmm. have been trying to, you know, to keep going in, mm-hmm. in terms of these conferences.
Now, the Caribbean Studies program, from my impression, seems like a very diverse program, not just, you know, ethnically, but even in terms of age groups of people who come into the program. Our audience here at CHRY is very much a, you know, working class family households in the northern part of Toronto. You know, could you tell us what the, because from my impressions in the program, it's very much a program that appeals to people who are maybe more lifelong students, or people who are not even trying to get a degree but want critical education, they want to learn.
Yeah, it has been attracting all of those kinds of students that you've just identified, as well as others who are going because, you know, their parents want to send them there and that
sure,
sort of
sure.
thing. But a wide variety of people. I mean, one year, one of my best students was an 82-year-old woman.
Wow.
Who, you know, did remarkably well in the course. And so on. And then we've had younger ones, of course. And we have students from so many parts in the world these days. You know, we have Turkish students, we have students from Iran, students from Lebanon, students mm-hmm. from Iraq, students from, you know, Egypt, students from various parts in continental Africa, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, all of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
You know, and some Latin American students too.
It's an interesting phenomenon. What is it about the Caribbean Studies program that's attracting people from, you know, all across the world? You don't see that same thing happening in say the African Studies program or the Near and Middle Eastern Studies program. Why is Caribbean Studies attracting that people from all across the world?
Well, I think people who are attracted to the program are people who are looking for something that would offer them the opportunity to think seriously, critically about issues that matter to them in their daily lives. And so far, we've been able to establish that kind of a space in some small way here at New mm-hmm. College, where this kind of criticality of approach is being done. I mean, the program is an anti-racist, anti-imperialist program.
Yeah, I don't know too many programs out there that would define themselves as anti-imperialist, and it seems to me that's why a lot of students, you know, thirsty and hungry for that knowledge have been coming to your program.
Yeah, it's explicitly an anti-racist, anti-imperialist program, mm-hmm. right? It's not just a program as such. And this appeals to a lot of people who want mm-hmm. to find out more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming in large numbers, and it makes for a very exciting time, actually.
So on that note, this is a conference that is open to the public as well, in addition to students?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's been open to the public ever since we started, and it's completely open to the public. There's no registration fee.
Unlike a lot of conferences.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't cost people anything. And we are going to, for those who stay for lunch and that sort of thing, we're going to have lunch. They don't have to pay for it. It's provided free of charge. And we have a variety of issues which we'll be discussing during the day. So it's a time for you know, the community at large, so to speak, as well as the university things.
Thank you very much, Professor Arnold de Toire. We're going to have to leave it there because we're running out of time. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Okay, thanks for this.
And we'll see you at the conference. That's Professor Arnold de Toire of the Caribbean Studies Program at University of Toronto. The Racism and National Consciousness Conference is going to be this weekend from 10 o'clock till 5:30 p.m. at New College. You can visit their blog, Racism and National Consciousness. Just Google that and you'll see it come up. Just before we go out for tonight, this is Waves You Crave, folks. Please call in, make a pledge, make a donation, make your support and your love for our show, for the community radio station felt by calling 416-736-5656. Calling right now, 416-736-5656. We need your support. Campus community radio stations like ours cannot keep going without the support of our listeners. And this is Radio Basics. After another week of our programming, you can find all of our earlier shows online on our website at basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com, as well as all of the regular content of Basics Community Newsletter. And if you want some more information, feel free to email us at basics.canada@gmail.com. We're going to have to leave it at that for the week. Once again, please call in, make your pledge, and we'll be back next week with Corey, Makaya, Dave Chin, and Kabir. Hosts, we're out.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.